with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
UCY.TV radio listeners, this is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is July 13th, 2016. It's a Wednesday, and as you know, on Wednesdays we interview activists and people concerned about saving our planet and helping us learn how to live in the Age of Vision. So today I have with us Chuck Johnson from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility once again, and I am super excited. Thank you, Chuck, for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Briefly, the last time we interviewed was that the doctors are not creating these oncology reports that are tracking pollution and, you know, like the harm to human health. Like what happened in Flint, the only reason that Flint got uncovered was because a pediatrician decided to keep track for herself, right?
Right. No, that's a good, I mean, that is a really good point. And, in the United States, we haven't had the kind of studies that they've had in other countries. In Germany and France and Great Britain, they've done studies around nuclear power plants to see if there's an elevated level of leukemia, because that's one of the cancers that can result from pollution from nuclear power plants. Strontium-90 is a bone seeker and can increase leukemia rates, and therefore, if you see elevated leukemia rates around nuclear power plants and you see a pattern of it, you might be able to conclude that that it's being caused by that. And when Germany was the first country that did that, I think it was about 5 years ago, and they found that, yes, just the normal operation of a nuclear power plant increased significantly enough to measure the amount of leukemia that people experienced around those nuclear power plants. It wasn't a huge effect. This is the normal operation nuclear power plant. We're not talking about an accident or anything. But it was enough to increase the amount of cancer. They found the same thing in France, and France is a very nuclear-dependent country and one that I believe they get about 70% of their electricity from nuclear energy. Wow. So if any country was going to suppress that information, they would be the ones, and their study found the same thing. Great Britain did a study, and initially they came up with the same conclusion, and then after some pressure backed down and said that, well, it could have been the just statistical variation, but that was really fudging, in my opinion, fudging the original conclusion that they made. The United States was scheduled to do a similar study. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission had actually set aside money to do that starting this year, and last year using the excuse that Congress continues to cut everybody's budget using the sequester, they decided to cut the funding for that study, saying it just wouldn't be that useful or valuable. Obviously they were afraid that the results would show similar results to those that were done in Europe. But to your question about trying to identify health effects from nuclear energy, it is difficult to do without doing a study along those lines, because in a normal operation of a nuclear power plant, the number of cancers are going to be relatively small. You're going to see some increase probably. If the German study and the French study were accurate, you're likely to see a small increase around these plants. But unless you can show a pattern with multiple plants, it's within statistical variation. So if you're just looking around one plant, you're not going to be able to see the pattern. You really do need a larger study with more samples.
I think St. Louis has actually shown us also another part of this factor is that people in our world now are mobile. So like what happened in St. Louis, the only reason we found out that St. Louis was even connected to the pollution there, the cancers there, everybody had moved away and connected on Facebook. And they began to recognize themselves because there were scientists in that group who said, you know, the one connecting factor we have among ourselves is we all grew up in Coldwater Creek. And then they started right. investigating what's there. So it's the same kind of thing in terms of the limiting. And in fact, all of this highlights exactly how the massive cover-up about the harm of nuclear pollution is on our planet, because if people knew how absolutely dangerous it is long-term, they would have nothing to do with it. They would demand it be shut down tomorrow. But the suppression of facts is so... And on top of that, it's a cacophony of really... militarism and fascism, in my view, because really, they are able now. You know, the NRC. If you can point to anything being caused, anything else other than nuclear being causing a disease, they immediately take nuclear off the table.
Let me point you to one study that you could go to, where Stephen Wing from University of North Carolina did a study of Three Mile Island. The residents around Three Mile Island, and found a number of health effects, statistically significant health effects. Now, he's been viciously attacked for his study, but it actually holds up pretty well. And the interesting thing is that the National Academy of Sciences, upheld in the Beer 7 report, the linear model for harm from radiation, and that is that there's no minimum level. You know, for a long time the nuclear power industry has been trying to say, well, you know, if you receive X amount of radiation, it's a safe level and there won't be any harm to you. And that was initially what Dr. Goffman and Dr. Tamplin were looking into for Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, was trying to find where that threshold was, and they didn't find it.
Right.
And of course, they were fired when they came up with that result and turned Goffman into quite the radical. But the National Academy of Sciences basically, in Beer 7, and that's the last word that they put out on this, agreed with Goffman that there isn't any threshold. There's harm that's done even from the smallest amount of radiation. It's hard to measure.
I would actually say that the radicals are now running our government. The radicals are the people who are ignoring the facts. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, they're killing science. That's essentially what they're doing.
Right. No, that's right. Yeah. You mentioned the Clintons earlier, and it's really funny because in the first go-round under Bill Clinton, I'm not sure what the reason was, but for whatever reason, he turned against nuclear energy. The subsidies weren't there in the 90s. You know, he wasn't really promoting renewable energy all that much, but, you know, somewhat. But he wasn't promoting nuclear energy at all. However, you know, after Bush got in and they wanted to have the nuclear renaissance and they got that up and running, and then Obama came in and just basically continued the same turn.
Do you understand that thinking, how any rational human being can actually say that these nuclear power plants need to keep running?
I can. Do you want me to tell you how I can rationalize?
Yeah, because I don't support this.
Don't get me wrong, but you know, the logic is that the main thing we need to worry about is climate change, and nuclear power emits less carbon, especially these plants that have already been built, and you don't have all of the carbon involved in building a new plant. You know, it emits less carbon even than natural gas burning, especially because natural gas is so much of it's fracked now and releases extra methane, which is a really bad climate change gas. That's the reasoning, but it totally ignores all the dangers of nuclear energy, especially running these old plants.
Well, the fact that
we can replace all of it. You know, we don't have to choose, honestly, because of the really fast change that's happening in terms of the solar and wind and battery power and just the whole and the massive efficiency increases, like the LED lighting. It's just amazing what's happening in the technological side to reduce the amount of energy that we need to use and to produce it in ways that don't produce greenhouse gases or radioactive waste. We don't have to make that choice anymore.
You know, that's exactly, Carl Grossman was on my show on Monday, and he said, we were talking about, because I asked him about, I know he's investigated chemical pollution as well as nuclear pollution, right? And he was saying the reality is, with both nuclear and chemical pollution that we have going on, because those two are competing for which one is the worst, we don't need any of it. We don't need the chemicals. We don't need the nuclear. It's only out there to make mega profits for a few hundred people. I mean, that's really the bottom line, is really it's about making a few people rich and the rest of the country gets sick. And this is the ironic part. This is why we will not have health care for all in our country, because that is part of the system. They destroy our food supply. They destroy our water supply. Then we have to pay them for our insurance premiums so that we can stay healthy. We have to buy their pharmaceuticals so that we don't get sick from their chemicals that they've put in our water. And we pay through the nose for our health care. And at the end of our lives, we have to finish paying. They drain us of all of our money. And when we're dying, we have to go to Medicare. So then our tax dollars gets paid to the same few hundred. I mean, it's a win-win. What a great cycle. This is why in my introduction I say we are assets on a balance sheet. And we are assets on a balance sheet to them.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. The thing that's sad is that we have a lot of people who are employed in these different industries, and they get called into play to defend them, you know, that and a lot of them are unionized. The nuclear power industry early on realized that they needed friends, and so they, you know, an awful lot of the nuclear power plants have union workers. And that's actually one of our biggest problems in trying to get the Columbia Generating Station closed down here in the Pacific Northwest, is that it's the workers there are part of unionized labor and have a lot of clout in the Democratic Party, and can't just see beyond the fact that, okay, we got these jobs now. There are potentially more jobs and better jobs if you replace that electricity, cleaner jobs, safer jobs, but you know, not all of them are unionized, and so this is one of the things that we need to be talking to our friends in the solar and wind industries, is that, hey, you know, if we're going to win this fight, we need you guys to give up a little profit, allow your people to unionize, and make sure that these are good paying jobs, so that we don't have to fight this fight with the union.
Yeah, well, I agree. And, you know, the other thing about this is, too, is what they're not recognizing in the nuclear industry is these jobs really – I mean, as Dr. Gordon said recently, we are living in the age of nuclear waste. Like we're going to need them to maintain this waste in perpetuity, so that there is a whole industry that's been created that is frankly not being developed. I mean, I really believe that if the nuclear industry closed down all these nuclear power plants, if we just forget the military use of nuclear, forget the medical, if we just shut down the nuclear power plants, there would be a whole industry that would spring up on how to maintain the waste, because as Donna Gilmore says, every single one of those nuclear power plants produces 1,000 Chernobyls every year in its nuclear waste containers. So there's a huge responsibility. It's a huge industry that is not being developed. And I think that is really the way of the future. And in the meantime, I guess this is like the buggy drivers, you know, the horse and buggy drivers. They fought very hard to keep the cars from being promoted, right? So it's that same self-interest without regard to what is necessary, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's true. The one of the things we'll have to guard against when they do get serious about trying to get money out of the waste industry is that it doesn't become one of those situations like we have at some of the U.S. Department of Energy cleanup facilities, where they basically do a half-assed job and drag their heels and just sort of bleed the whoever's
the
paying for it.
Yeah,
you bleed the system.
Blow up tanks underground and deny it.
Yeah, I mean, Hanford is a horrible situation right now with the tank waste that they've got there. The plan they have for solidifying it has never been viable, and every time some whistleblower points that out, they get fired. They've dragged this out for years and spent $12 billion on this facility that'll never run.
Billion.
And then in the meantime, they have all these workers out there guarding these tanks getting exposed to toxic chemicals, you know, and then pretend like they're not being harmed. So
I read an article
it's a nasty
this morning.
Thing.
Although the unions are helping them, because I heard this morning, I read an article that said the unions are sticking by their guns and insisting that their workers not go back in because they're being exposed to harmful contaminants that are of the vapors up in Hanford. Did you read that article?
Right. Yes.
So
that's
one instance where the union is a good thing. I mean, we do need unions. I'm not against the unions at all. I think that, you know, frankly, if the unions had actually more courage, they could do more against the nuclear industry to hold them accountable. But, you know, these people are deadly serious. They literally, when they don't care about the actual life of their own workers, it's obvious. I mean, we know for a fact that children living around these nuclear power plants are born with holes in their hearts. That's just these are things that we know. These have been unequivocally proven. And whoever makes these decisions, like at the NRC website, they say we know we're going to have 32,000 extra cancers a year and 225,000 birth defects. That's on their website. What other industry accepts death as part of the ability to operate?
I haven't seen that. You'll have to send me that web link.
Yeah, it's a given. They make this, it's actually, to be honest, those standards are way higher now since they changed the radiation rate since Fukushima.
You're going to have to send that to me because I haven't seen that. I'm surprised that they would admit any deaths. That's basically the industry line is that nobody's died as a result of commercial nuclear power. In the United States, including from Three Mile Island, which is not true. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And that's just, but you know where that comes from? That's the given from Dr. John Goffman's studies. That was the given that he said. So they just have accepted that. They, you know, it's part of what it's just a little blurb that they know that this is going to happen. And it's just so unconscionable. And this is the thing that, like, as I said earlier to you before we got on the air, I was 3 years ago, I was like most Americans. I thought nuclear was great. I did not believe it hurt anybody. When President Obama came out and told us that Fukushima was being handled, I remember thinking, oh, thank God we have Obama as president because he's really making sure this works. I really, and I believe that until 2012. It took me a long, I mean, and I, only because I had a nightmare and started digging around. I wasn't like I pieced it all together myself. You know what I mean? Like, so I get it how most Americans are completely unaware of the harm that nuclear is causing our country. And frankly, and this is something I'd like to touch with you on, mm-hmm. I have been kind of on a rampage lately about the National Resource Defense Fund, Environmental Defense Fund, even 350.org with Bill McKibben saying that, you know, nuclear is not so bad as coal. I can't understand why they, if they would just agree that nuclear is just as toxic, it would be fine. But, you know, it's been 5 years since Fukushima has gone on. I have not seen any of these massive organizations calling for more efforts to help our country, help Japan stop it or fix it or remediate it. And I'm just nonplussed at the silence of these so-called establishment environmentalist organizations who really right. have ignored the threat to human health from nuclear. I am nonplussed. Yeah.
Well, I think they definitely have put it on as a second-tier problem after climate change, that's for sure. And McKibben has said he doesn't think nuclear is a viable option for economics, and I think that's mainly been to, you know, placate his pro-nuclear supporters, but also not to anger his anti-nuclear supporters. So he's been straddling the fence, but he's been saying that, you know, he doesn't favor going nuclear, but he hasn't exactly been pushing to close down existing reactors, nor have NRDC or the Environmental Defense Fund. But NRDC was involved, as I was telling you earlier, with the closure decision, the deal that was made with Pacific Gas and Electric, and with Diablo Canyon, twin nuclear power plants, on the California coast. And it's a very, they're basically two ways now, two models for closing nuclear power plants. And this is the slow model that they came up with, which is the carbon neutral model. Because in most places, if you shut down a nuclear power plant, you know, today, and you, people would still expect to have electricity. And if they were to get it, they probably would have to get it from the burning of additional natural gas somewhere. So it would have a carbon impact. And that's where some of these environmentalists have problems with immediate shutdown of nuclear power plants. So that we just had within the last month, we had two examples of one of each model. The Omaha Public Power District is going to shut down the Port Calhoun nuclear power station at the end of this year. And they're going to replace it in part with their surplus, in part with wind, but about a third of it's probably going to come from natural gas. But they just did it purely on economics because they were getting clobbered in terms of the amount of money that they were losing by running this expensive nuclear power plant compared to the market rates. You know, it was more than double the amount that they will pay when they shut it down. And they just couldn't see doing that to their ratepayers any longer. Now, presumably, hopefully, in Nebraska, they'll develop renewable energy resources, and as these things get cheaper and cheaper, there'll be more solar and wind out there and more battery storage backup, et cetera, and they can shut down the gas plants as well. But that's what's going to happen there. Now, in California, it's a phase out over 8 and 9 years. And California has the most aggressive renewable energy and conservation plan in the entire country. But shutting down two 1,000 megawatt reactors is a lot of electricity to replace. So they're thinking that it might take them that long to totally replace it and not have to replace it with either coal or natural gas burning. I'm thinking that at the rate that they're going, they may be able to shut them down sooner than that, and hopefully they will, because those plants are extremely dangerous where they're located, and you know, right on earthquake faults and right next to the ocean, and they're killing fish on a, you know, they're already violating the state law. They have a variance, which is about to expire, but looks like it'll probably be extended because of this deal that allows them to dump their hot water from the reactor straight into the Pacific Ocean.
Would you say that again? Tell me that. Say that again. What?
Yeah. They don't have cooling towers at Diablo Canyon. They just pour the hot water from the cooling, not directly from the reactor. They have pipes and a closed system for the reactor water, but they cool it with a secondary water system that gets just boiling hot, and they just send it straight into the ocean. They're the largest thermal polluter on the Pacific coast.
Wow.
They kill about 1.5 billion fish annually. And
for how long have they been doing that? How long has that been going on?
They started they started them up in 1984 and 85. And their variance is about to expire next year, and they've had hearings on it. This deal was announced a week before the first hearing they were going to have on whether or not to extend those variances, those thermal pollution variances.
Chuck, where could anybody go to find out about it if they want to make comments or get engaged in that? Because Diablo Canyon is a very big concern to many people across the country.
Well, so, they should contact Mothers for Peace in San Luis Obispo. That would be, if I were just, you know, without looking on the web right now,
yeah,
that would be the first place to go. And there should be on their website links to this process that's going on and before the, I think it's the California Lands Commission. I'm not sure. I don't live in California, so I don't know the names of all the agencies there, but I believe that's what it is.
You know what I feel like, Chuck? This is really interesting. I feel like we're standing behind a dam with a bunch of holes that are leaking, and we're going from one hole to the next, sticking our finger in that hole, sticking our finger in this hole, and we're behind it, and the water is pushing down on us. I mean, it is such an intense... I mean, we are hitting the edge of the functionability of a lot of these nuclear power plants, which is why the utilities are agreeing to close them down. And then...
That's true.
You know, yeah. What's happening is now they're having to face the reality of we didn't do things right in the first place to naturally shut these things down. So now they're having to think of secondary and tertiary responses to how do we figure this out. Like, I was really livid about Diablo Canyon being closed down by 2025. I thought that was far, far, far too long. Now that you tell me the NDRC was involved, I understand. They got an $11 million contribution from somebody. They won't tell us who it is, but my guess is it has to do with the nuclear industry or somebody like that. I mean, that, yeah, that would be my big guess. They're out there helping Diablo. When we could in California within 2 years put up enough solar plants to shut that thing down in 2 or 3 years. We could build an industry boom right now with solar or wind, especially over there. We could do wind power or even hydropower. I mean, we have not really developed the resources, the natural resources, to not harm. It's like Carl Grossman told me the other day. We don't need all these chemical plants. We don't need the nuclear power plants. The only reason we are doing them is they are mega profitable for the people who run them. And they control the media. And so we are being fed this pack of lies that it's all being, A, handled correctly, and that we all need them. And
yeah.
There
is an interesting thing that's happening with integrating renewable energy, and they're doing a lot of it in California. And Pacific Gas and Electric, in explaining their decision to shut down the nuclear plant, their CEO is a member, what used to be the president of the Nuclear Energy Institute. So it's not exactly a pro, environment, anti-nuclear organization by any means. But the reality is that they have mandates now in California to have up to 50% of their electricity come from renewable sources. And as they get closer and closer to that goal, running that nuclear plant becomes a real problem because you can't turn, you know, when you have variable power sources like solar and wind, it's helpful to have your backup be something that's flexible, something that can turn up, you can turn up and down rapidly. And you can't do that with nuclear energy. You have to pretty much run it full tilt to make it pay for itself. And their CEO explained in the press release that, you know, as they approach this 50% level, they were going to have to keep the plant shut down for about half the year, you know, under their projections. And if you do that, you basically make the power even twice as expensive as it already is. So, you know, it was in their interest to get this thing shut down. The slow timeline also was in their interest because it gives them maximum flexibility about, you know, how much money they can get out of the PUC, how much it gives them a mandate with, you know, to go to the PUC and say, you know, we're going to run this plant X number of years and we deserve a rate of return for our investors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval to whatever plan they come up with. It was definitely in their interest to do it that way, but ultimately they're going to have to get out of it. Now, we'd like them to do it sooner because that plant is dangerous. You know, it's not...
Yeah.
We're joking around about how dangerous that plant is.
Well, not only that, it's pouring pollution into, I mean, it's unmitigated to me. Like, I am just nonplussed about how the lack of regard for the negative effects to human health, that is complete. The only thing we ever talk about is cost. But we're not talking about the cost to human health, to our society, to our people. Are the human beings who are supposedly, I mean, we want this electricity because we need to have electricity, right? That's what we're being told. There's never a conversation about, we're going to shut the plant down. You're going to have to reduce your power by 10% across the board, period. 10% is a very minimal amount to cut your power down in your own house. So people
That's
don't
true.
Have to suffer. There is no necessity. It's not like it's, like you said in France, you said it was up to 70% of their electricity. That,
yeah.
I can understand them taking the slow train to shut down the nuclear power plants because that would put people back in the Stone Ages. You know what I mean? It would be gas lanterns all across the nation of France. I understand
right.
that. But in
right.
our country where it's less than 10%, at a maximum, I think we hear New York is 20%, which I still don't believe.
No, actually, those figures, it's 19% of our electricity comes from nuclear. And it's as high as 50% in Illinois. So in some parts of the country, it is a really high amount.
Yeah, but, you know, look at the
oncology. Not here, not in the Northwest, or even in California,
right.
some less, quite a bit less.
Well, they have 100% invested in nuclear across east of the Mississippi. They're just awash with nuclear pollution. I mean, you probably couldn't go 50 miles without standing in a polluted environment. If you look at a map, Carl Grossman added in his book that a map that was created in 1977. We talked about it the other day. It was a map of every single nuclear facility in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And across the board, east of the Mississippi, it was just completely dotted. Like there was just, you probably couldn't go 50 miles without having some exposure to nuclear, to be honest. And you
mm-hmm.
lay that over the chemical pollutions. Like it's a wonder that our people aren't, in fact, our people are dropping off like flies. I mean, cancer's
the
number one killer
yeah.
of children.
I mean,
you know?
It's amazing how resilient people are, you know, given the amount of different pollutants that we're exposed to and the things we're eating that you know, our bodies weren't designed to deal with. You know, it's an assault on a lot of different levels. You know, the guy, I remember hearing that Helen Caldicott had a symposium 2 years after Fukushima in New York City, and a lot of really interesting researchers showed up there and presented material. And there's a guy who's been studying, a Ukrainian who's been studying population outside of the official evacuation zone of Chernobyl, but an area that still got pretty badly dosed, where people are so poor, they used to bring in food for them to eat, so they wouldn't have to eat contaminated food, but that ended. So they're basically eating their own crops there. And they're having a lot of health effects. But he says it's more complicated than just, you know, they're near Chernobyl, they're eating contaminated food, therefore their children are born with microencephaly, you know, smaller heads.
Yeah.
No, it's a combination of that, poor diet, and alcoholism. You know, all of those things are causing chromosomal damage to occur, and it's a combination that eventually causes chromosomes to break down and not repair themselves, because that's something our cells are used to. Is, you know, they have to be able to repair themselves, because damage does occur ordinarily in the environment, even without these additional things added in. But if you add too much burden, then you're going to have a greater number of these things that don't heal themselves and then get passed on to the next generation. So that was his explanation of it. This is why it's hard to prove a single cause for so many of these diseases, because it usually isn't just a single cause. It's a combination of causes. But you can see, if you just measure in areas around where contamination has occurred, if there's increases of various types of diseases, and the other inputs are, you know, taken into account, you can pretty much show that there are definitely health effects coming from Chernobyl. And any honest scientist who's looked at it would admit that as well.
Well, I think that this really brings up the larger issue right now. You know, we're becoming aware that it is not just the nuclear pollutants. It is there. These industries were developed all around about the same time, and basically, what they've done is allowed deniable plausibility. You know what I mean? Like they can, or plausible deniability. I think that's what they say. You know, like
right.
The chemicals cause this. The nuclear causes this. I mean, who knows what's causing what? We have high rates of alcoholism, high rates of drug use. Who knows what causes what? What we do know is we have developed a culture that basically is eating off its own arms. I mean,
right.
Essentially,
well,
you know, and we need to figure out a way to just stop the chomping, you know?
I mean, this is really true. I mean, it's so funny. I've been involved in conversations about talking about the cleanup of Hanford. And one of the pollution plumes that they have right now is in the 300 area, where they did a lot of experimentation, creating fuels and so forth, is a bunch of uranium gotten into the soil and then down into the aquifer. And cleaning it up would be really expensive. You'd have to dig out a whole bunch of dirt and then move all that dirt up to a central plateau and put it in a clay line.
Is that burial. Those 40 miles of trenches that they just buried, they just dumped nuclear waste into the 40 miles of trenches that's seeping into the groundwater?
Well, actually, the clay-lined burial ground is about as good as you're going to be able to get. Unfortunately, until these things radioactively decay, it doesn't go away. But you can keep it out. You can reduce the rate at which it gets released. So, but anyway, going back to this contamination, they're saying, well, we don't really think we should have to clean that up because, you know, there's already, just from fertilizing crops on the other side of the river, there's more uranium getting into the Columbia River from fertilizer than there is from this plume of uranium. And they may be right about that. That's a pretty sad situation when you think about it. Here we are, you know, artificially fertilizing cropland and actually adding to the uranium contamination of the Columbia River at a higher rate
wow.
than in the Hanford site. So that's a pretty interesting thing. It's sort of the argument, though, that we're doing this one crazy thing over here, so therefore that makes this other slightly less crazy thing, you know, not crazy, right?
Yeah. That is exactly what it's about. And I don't believe that's unintentional. I mean, it's almost an orchestrated assault on the planet. I mean, this is, I have to say the denial of the pro-nuke industry is beyond comprehension to me. I literally had somebody say, well, even if it does cause harm, most people can live 50 or 60 years before they get affected. I was like, yeah. What? Say what? Like, you're determining that we don't have, and the quality of life that people have to live has to be diminished so we can have, I'm just nonplussed that these environmental organizations, these establishment environmentalists, there is no conversation about it is imperative for us to reduce our electricity use. It's not a bad thing for us to not have to use electricity 24 hours a day, nonstop. Well, I mean,
you're hitting on something that I've been running into too, which is the whole issue of what is sufficient for a balanced lifestyle and a sustainable planet. And I think it's obviously using a lot less than we currently use in the United States, especially with the population levels we have around the world. If we don't either A, start using a whole lot less, or B, start reducing the amount of people we have on the planet, or preferably C, both, we're going to run out of resources. We aren't going to be able to, even with all the advances we're making in solar and wind and energy conservation and all the rest, if we just keep consuming the way we do and our population keeps growing, we're going to have environmental crisis after environmental crisis.
Well, Fukushima has taken care of the population control.
No.
Because we have a nuclear – we basically have a nuclear volcano going on in Fukushima. And
well,
the first
it hasn't
people
taken care of the population control. It hasn't. It's not.
It will. I mean, this is the interesting thing. When you read John Goffman's books, he has been my foundation. That's the person that I've been reading, and Helen Caldicott. Those are the two people that I have read. And honestly, really seriously, this is the thing that people who talk about this don't consider. The greatest harm to come from nuclear pollution has not happened yet. We are looking at 2-3 generations down the road when people are sterile, when people come out mutated, and then those mutated people cannot reproduce. We're seeing this from the victims of Chernobyl. People that have moved away from Chernobyl cannot have babies.
We're still talking about, it's at the rate people are growing on Earth, the numbers of people that this would affect in that way is not going to get rid of our overpopulation problem, I don't believe. So, I mean, you're right that you can have those effects, and that's one of the horrible things about genetic damage is that it doesn't just go away. When a person dies of cancer, that's a sad thing, but at least they didn't pass it on to their kids. But if they passed on mutated genes to their kids that cause harm, then that just continues on.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. This is why, like, these establishment so-called, I really refuse to call them environmentalists. They are refusing to have this conversation about nuclear. Like, yeah, we may not see it immediately, but it's not like we don't have solutions. This is why, like, I looked into the 990 forums of all these major establishment so-called environmentalist organizations. I was dumbfounded that they are bringing in $150 million a year, that the officers' salaries are $500,000, $200,000 a year. And
yeah.
They call themselves environmental activists. Really? It is a level of brainwashing that is beyond comprehension.
Well, it's a co-option. It's people begin to feel entitled. Their friends in government and in private industry are making these big salaries, and they say, well, we got to, if we want to attract good people, we got to, pay them this much. And that mentality is true across the board in the United States, and it's not too surprising some of these environmental organizations have taken that view. But,
how many people work for Homeland Security thinking that they've got a good job while they're spying on Americans. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, that's the kind – I mean, it is across the board. It's not just the nuclear industry. It is – we have lost what – values and ethics mean? It is about an ethical stand. When are you going to stand up to the fact in every industry?
Or anything else, you know.
This is my point about the whole thing about the income. In America, we really need to understand what ethics really means. And if our entire focus is how much money can you make, we are going to lose our quality of life. Because money separates us. I mean, the goal and the thrust for money blinds us to what is important in our lives. And we've seen this time after time after time again.
And it leads to a lot of these polluting industries because you don't want to go against money. If there's a lot of money behind it, this worship of money adds value to something that really doesn't have value. But it's given value because there's a lot of money behind it.
That's right. Well, the other part of that also is there's people working in these industries. They're finally getting a decent job. You know, oh, my God, we can – like Richland. Richland is the one city in America that is doing excellently well. You can go there and work for Hanford or work for the Columbia Generating Station and make a boatload of money unlike you could do anywhere else.
They did not have a recession there Senator Patty Murray was able to carve out some of Obama's stimulus package during the recession for cleanup at Hanford. And, they got billions of dollars there. And if you look at the statistics through the entire recession, they had increasing property values there. Their income level stayed high, and they did not experience a recession in Richland or in the Tri-Cities at all. So they're the only area in the entire Pacific Northwest that had no recession.
You know, that brings up a good point, though. I do have a lot of respect for people who have the courage to face the nuclear monster and work in that industry and do the cleanup. I get it. I've spoken with a couple of them who feel like they're doing their patriotic duty. It's not just about the money. These are people who are working.
I agree. Well, and they did some good work along the river. I mean, they have dug out a lot of the contaminants that were putting strontium and hexavalent chromium and a lot of different pollutants that were leaking into the Columbia River from those old reactors there. They dug up those sources of those plumes, and again, they trucked it inland to the plateau, dumped it in a clay-lined burial. You know, it didn't make it go away. You can't make it go away once you've made it. But it kept it from getting into the river. So that was money well spent. The amount of money they've been pouring into this waste vitrification plant that's never going to work, that'll blow up if they actually turn it on, that was money wasted. And that's, so we need to be smart about how we do this. But, we need to be putting money into cleanup and then holding them accountable and not just, again, turning a blind eye because Bechtel got a big contract and Patty Murray doesn't want to question them on the waste vitrification plant.
Well, they're not. This is the reality with the Price-Anderson Act. Nobody's held accountable. This is my thing. This is where I really love Mimi Gurman's attitude about it all. We're alive about life. You are alive about life. Any people that are working in this, that have gotten that are advocating shutting down nuclear power, love life. Love life very fully and really want to see us come out of this era of mistake. In my view, the nuclear industry was a failed experiment, and it is only being promoted because it helps promote war, and war is the only product the United States produces right now. And until we face this, we can't stop it. This is why, for me, I'll just say it straight out. I 100% believe that Bernie Sanders was coerced and intimidated by the Clinton machine into backing her. I personally will never vote for her. I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. But I think we're on the precipice of having all of us. We have to take a stand against these monsters. And when I say monsters, I include her in one of them. I'm unequivocal, and I will speak openly against the Clinton machine because I think they're as bad, if not worse, than the Bush machine. They're much more subversive. And
The thing that I've noticed, and without buying into, all of the conspiracies about her, which I'm actually going to be taking a much closer look at now, and I thank you for pointing me toward them. But even if you don't buy all that stuff, we've had trouble ever since the first Clinton administration, and really Jimmy Carter was the same problem too. When you have Democratic administrations, the left goes to sleep. You know, it's you know, you've got, when Bush was in and doing stuff that we didn't like, it wasn't that hard to rally even the more mainstream organizations to fight what he was doing.
Although, Chuck, I'm going to stop you, because when Bush came in, this is one of my biggest objections to Clinton. They rubber-stamped the Bush plan. They rubber-stamped the NDAA. They rubber-stamped the Unpatriot Act. They rubber-stamped the Iraq War, and they have not, honestly, the Democrats, when they say left and right, it's a Republicrat. We are a fascist.
No, you're right. No, I'm saying you had at least a group of Democrats. I mean, when they were fighting over the Iraq War ratification in the Senate, it was relatively close, you know, because there was a group of Democrats who you could rally in opposition to what Bush was trying to do. And it didn't end up being a majority. And the same thing happened in the first Gulf War with Bush's dad. You know, again, it was they ended up, you know, I think they won with 51-49 vote or something like that. But anyway, you could have an organized opposition party, however weak and wimpy it was. But when you have that weak, wimpy party in power completely with the presidency, and they do stuff that's against our the common good, it's
Can
really hard
TPP?
To fight. Really,
yeah.
Really hard to fight. You know.
Yes.
I mean, that's why a lot of the table was set for the Bush administration by the first Clinton administration.
That's
true.
The
whole banking law was changed in ways that set up the Great Recession completely under Bill Clinton.
He gave the airways to the three corporations that now control it. I mean, you are 100% right. And this is why it's even more important.
That started in Reagan, you know, but Clinton, you know, didn't stop it. He kept it going.
Well, you know, this is why it's very important. This is why I'm always encouraging my listeners to get actively engaged, find your voice, figure out what you can do, even if it seems pointless. I don't think we can just give up and not push back.
There is one solid argument for voting for Hillary. You're going to get mad at me for saying this, but the U.S. Supreme Court has gotten noticeably worse as a result, and our court system generally has gotten noticeably worse on civil liberties issues as a result of Republican presidencies. And that's one area where they are more liberal in terms of just your average person's dealings with, you know, government and authority and everything else. The Republicans are worse, and they put worse people into judgeships and on the Supreme Court. So I know
I've heard that argument, but you know, my view is that she's not that liberal. I think she is a Republican. I don't think the only one thing that she will do, because she's female, is protect the right to choose.
Right.
But, you know, the reality is, if women decided, this is why the right to choose became legal in the first place. It was illegal. And then women did it anyways, and we lost up to 10,000 women a year, and the people were mortified, because this is not a political issue. It's a personal, private, medical issue. No one has a legal right to tell anyone what to do in terms of regards to their family. So if, let's say, I mean, I personally am not ever going to cast a vote for Monsanto Clinton. I don't care what happens. I will never, ever, ever. I just, to me, it's like voting for Stalin. I could not vote for her. I will not. I mean, in my view, if it gets that bad, maybe the country needs to go so far to the right it scares the daylights out of people, that they actually stand up. And we, because I've attempted.
Well,
to
we've had
that
protests. Theory for a while, and we ended up with post 9/11 George W. Bush, Dick Cheney world, and I'm not sure.
Look, well, that, you know, happened because of the Democrats.
We don't know whether Gore would have done it any differently, you know, but...
Well, look, we do know that the Democrats...
I voted for Nader, you know. I'm one of the ones who said, you know what, I'm tired of the drift that Clinton and Gore are taking us, you know, and we need to have real Democrats. We need to have a real alternative party and not the fake one. But, you know, George W. Bush was, and Dick Cheney, that was a pretty harshly bad administration. There's no doubt about it. I'm not sure Bush would have had to work really hard to have been worse than that one.
Well, you know, and that's how I feel. But you know what, Chuck, we have about 3 minutes left. I'm hope that you can come back and we can continue this conversation because, you know me, I'm pretty straightforward and I really enjoy the engagement and you bring such valuable information to my listeners. Is there anything that you'd like to tell our listeners before we end?
Well, those in the Pacific Northwest, because this is where my focus has been, I just think we can be really encouraged by the vote of the Seattle City Council to tell their municipal utility, Seattle City Light, that their new policy is to close the Columbia Generating Station and replace it with carbon-neutral electricity. And we have the blueprint from California, the slow-motion version. We need to have the fast-motion version for our region. And we need to take this message into the rest of the utilities that make up Energy Northwest and all the other publicly owned utilities and get them to pass the same kind of resolution and get the message to the Bonneville Power Administrator and to Energy Northwest that it's time to close that reactor and replace it with renewable energy. And so I think we can applaud that Seattle City Light's the largest utility in Energy Northwest. And this is, I think, a watershed moment. I think we're going to see an announcement within the next couple of years that the CGS is going to be closed down, and especially if we all get out there and work on our utilities and try to get them to take the same position Seattle did.
Contact the utilities, especially if you live in Washington. Well, so, and then you do have a website. Does the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility have an actively engaged website? I haven't actually looked because I talked to you.
We do, but actually the best one for this, which is a coalition website, it's a Nuclear Free Northwest, nuclearfreenw.org. www.nuclearfreenw.org, and all the latest information on the Columbia Generating Station and nuclear power issues in the Northwest can be found there.
So, okay, that's awesome. I also know people can go to radcast.org and find a lot of information also on the Northwest information. So, Chuck Johnson, thank you for joining us. I really sincerely appreciate your time. I hope that we can do this again because the information you bring to us is valuable. The conversation is always stimulating. So, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Lonnie. I really enjoyed it, too.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Put your courage feet on, everybody.
UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?
This is JJ.